Hello, Internet. It's Peter Hassett. I sat down with John Press of Japers Rink for a little blog summit meeting of the minds, long-formed, unstructured conversation. I think it was really great. It was really the first time that me and JP have ever actually chatted, despite writing about the same hockey team from 15 minutes apart for most of the last decade, him longer. The first part of the podcast is up on the Japers Rink radio feed. You can find it at japersrink.com or on Twitter at Japers Rink Radio. And here's the second part. I don't think you have to listen to the first one before you listen to this one. But, you know, for continuity's sake, you should do it. So go check that out and then listen to this. Thank you for listening to the Rush Machine podcast. Thank you for leaving reviews and giving us those 5-star reviews and all that stuff. That's really helpful. And we have a blast. Go Caps. Thank you.
And now, it's time for the RMNB Podcast.
I went like podcast crazy. I've been listening to you guys for a long time, but I added JJ Regan and Tarek's Capitals Faceoff one, and like I disagree with maybe 98% of the things they say, but it's really entertaining. And like Tarek has amazing access and has good insight into stuff. Sure. And also like of all the people that write about the Capitals, like he's played a shitload of hockey. Whoa, I just dropped a bomb there. So, like he knows. When somebody missed, like, drops an assignment, he knows what happened there.
It's good stuff. I mean, we are, for being a, you know, small hockey town or...
Ooh, a minor league sports town.
Right, minor league sports town for sure. But, like, you know, not having a hockey culture or whatever anybody might say about it. We have some pretty phenomenal coverage of the local team through, whether it's Isabel and... everyone at the Post who's done a tremendous job in the postseason. Tarek, you know, they've obviously stepped up their game quite a bit. And even the parachuters and alums who come by and, you know, Wyshynski came from here. Corey Massasak came from here.
Where's Corey at now? What is he doing?
He's writing for The Athletic. He's like doing Devils for the Athletic. I think that's going to be his primary thing. But so that's what he's up to. But yeah, we've been very lucky with the coverage and obviously with you guys and the blogs around here and what we've been doing for a while.
I mean, it's been like a long journey. Like we probably have some interesting perspectives that like other people don't have because we've seen some really interesting like upstarts and like I mean I read you guys before I was writing myself and then the grandfather at least of like the tone that I like and the kind of sports writing that appeals to me is what like Steinberg had been doing forever. I didn't actually read Steinberg until after I was a little bit into it and Ian was more into it than I was, but to see like there was a time where like Ted's like, yep, go for it. And Nate Ewell was extremely supportive and fostering of stuff. In fact, it was maybe 2010 summer. Caps got heartbroken against Montreal. And there's like an email that gets sent out. And it's like, hey, anybody want to come hang out at Kettler? And we'll talk about stats and resources for writing. And I was like, sure, I guess. I wasn't that into the analytical side at the time. I'm an English nerd. Like, we sat down and Nate's like, here's hockey reference. Here's how play index works. And I go, huh, that's interesting. And then, you know, like we were collaborating with Neil Greenberg for a long time, who's done great stuff at the Fancy Stats blog. And like Neil taught me about like some shot attempt stuff that I didn't actually understand really well at the time. And it started to stick for me better. And I don't think that it's just so surreal to think that like someone who like, in a lot of ways we function as scabs, you know, we aren't full-time employees of a journalistic, you know, publication. We're doing a lot of the stuff just sort of out of our will. I mean, we get paid okay, but like, not great. And the team and really other writers were overtly supportive to us. And I understand for a long time, like, Taliantis, like a media strategy, found that really advantageous. First, as he was just sort of putting pressure on the Post to give them better coverage, which eventually they did. And also to put the needle to like Comcast and ultimately NBC to say, do better. And holy crap, have they done better? I mean, like, NBC Sports Washington, by the way, congratulations to all those guys for getting a promotion effectively from Comcast, the most hated company in America, to NBC last year. They did like 2 hours of coverage post game, really all year. And I mean, like, some of that stuff appeals to me more than others, but it's still, I mean, it's amazing that the volume knob had been turned up.
Yeah. I mean, you look at where this team came from coming out of the 2004 lockout, 2004-05 lockout. And you're right. I mean, it was a big tent. Come on in if you want to write nice things about our team, if you want to write bad things about our team.
Just,
I mean,
please write.
that's, you know, Ted has been very good to us and our site, and, you know, has really never shied away from criticism if it was, you know, justified and backed up. And, you know, you leave out the ad hominem stuff and make arguments that have some foundation, and he's willing to take it. I mean, I think he gets a lot of grief for being thin-skinned in some places, and, you know, personally, I have not found that to be the case in his dealings with us. And the coverage in this town, it really has improved tremendously. You know, how many, what you were saying, the NBCSN, they were running specials and extra programming and everything. And, you know, I think that was even before we got close to the finals. They really upped the game. They've got, you know, Alan Mays, one of the top local analysts anywhere, and probably should be on NHL Network, but you know, selfishly, I hope we can keep him around.
I think he's
here.
Too good for the NHL Network. I think the NHL Network is sleepwalking most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, they're hit or miss. I like some of the guys over there quite a bit, but there are also some guys I can largely do without. But yeah, and your pal Brent Johnson, surfer guy, Brent Johnson. But they got, you know, an Al Kokin who has more institutional knowledge about hockey and sports in this town than just about anybody. He's just a font of wisdom. It's been tremendous, the coverage in this town, top to bottom. And yeah, for our part as bloggers, you know, I shy away, and I think you do too sometimes, from the credentialed media stuff. And there are guys on my site who love it. Jason and Jeff, they go cover games, do a great job. It's not my thing. Maybe at one time it was, like, there was a little bit of a thrill with it, and an interest aspect. And, you know, there was a piece they ran on Hockey Night in Canada back in like 08 or something like that, where where it was Elliot Friedman. He came to the press box and was talking to me, I think Eric McElhane, maybe a couple other people that were up there at the time. And it was like,
look what, blog, Rock yeah, Red, Home Run Right. Boy.
Look what Washington's doing. They've got these non-media folks in the press box, and, you know, look at these bloggers. And it was, you know, the connotation that bloggers had was something, you know, not necessarily the most positive thing, I think, at the time, even though I was probably better dressed and educated than 90% of the press box at the time. But I mean, I've never tried to do the press thing. I make no apologies whatsoever for my biases. I'm a fan, and that's all I ever wanted to do with the blog. And, you know, I wanted to have a place where we could have conversations about the hockey team, and that's it. You know, maybe guide the conversation, maybe inform it, but that's sort of what our community was, and from the get-go. And, you know, it's one of the really rewarding things personally from this this run and this championship, is how many people have been there, like, with us, like, with you guys the whole way, and, like, ups and downs, all of it.
You're hearing from people that, like, read you in, like, 2007,
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten more personal notes.
Hey, man, I really liked your article about, oh God, pull up a player, Brian Woolsey. Or somebody who was playing like this first.
I mean, we probably had several Brian Woolsey articles. That Ovi's first roommate on the road, I think.
Is that right? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was Woolsey.
Coming out of the woodwork to like shout it. It feels great.
Yeah, I mean, but everybody, I got comped the beer that I brought over here. I got comped from my good friends over at Gilly's today, because when I went to pay, he saw my name on my credit card. He said, "You know what, man, this is on me. Thanks for all your work." And so, yeah, it's really this community. You saw it turn out. I mean, obviously way broader than my readership or your readership. Turn out for the road games, the Sea of Red outside Capital One Arena. And, I mean, not insignificantly, all of that went down with, like, I didn't hear any problems with cops or cop car. There was a lot of trash everywhere. But, you know, there... One dude got arrested for climbing a pole or something.
Yeah. Okay. And as he did, the crowd chanted, "Please don't die," which is the opposite of the cheer that you would get in any other major market city.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in Philadelphia, they'd be literally eating horse shit off the ground right now. So I think we have a leg up on that.
Snopes.com on that one. I still don't believe it. The what you were saying about like the attitude towards like the alternative media or whatever euphemism you want to use for it. I mean, I unloaded like both barrels on the team a couple times in like at different moments. And then 2 months later, we got an email saying like, "Hey, come have a chicken salad sandwich or you know, a salad at then Verizon Center with Zach and Ted just to talk about what it was like and what attitudes are good. Like, and like, or what they can do to make, not to like help us, but to, they weren't like asking for insight, but they just wanted to have a relationship, which is just so stunning, because like I mean, I've written some horrible stuff both in quality and in tone. Yeah. And I've gotten nothing but, you know, positive feedback from the higher ups.
Yeah,
the higher ups at the Capitals organization. It's stunning. And then that said, I've seen some messy stuff over the years. Like, do you remember, was it just called the Caps blog? Do you remember that one from like, it was,
yeah,
like 2010, 2011. Just one
like a Blogspot or something.
Yeah. Well, were you first Blogspot? Was it jbirdshrink.blogspot.com?
Yeah, yeah. And then SB Nation acquired. And I think it was just me at the time, and that was before I added Becca. Becca's great. Yeah,
Does she just not sleep? Like, is she doing this from like midnight till 2 o'clock in the morning, or is she just up super early?
She's not up super early. She probably won't listen to this, so I can.
To do that compilation is so, well, it's such an in-freaking valuable resource.
Yeah, Becca and Emily, like, pretty early on, we decided that we wanted to be like the place that people started their day. And so we started doing these link posts, these Caps clips were just aggregate links. And back then, it could be like, this is all the Caps news you're going to see today. Like, because that was before Tarek had a blog at Washington Post. That was literally in the time where there would not be news on the internet between what came out in the morning and what came out the next morning. Like, you wouldn't see it really. You know, it was before Twitter was what Twitter is now, before you'd really get a sense of anything. So, you know, it would be just compiling the links from the night before and the day before. And yeah, Becca and Emily do an incredible job on that. And I love that we've been able to sort of engage the blogger community and put shine a light on a lot of other people's work that they might not have necessarily been able to have seen and as widely read without a little signal boost.
So I'm sure I told this a couple years ago, but this is for a very long time, japersrink.com was the biggest referrer to Rush Machine. It might still be. I just haven't checked in forever. And I don't think that we would have had this is your fault. You share a lot of the blame for all the awful Rush Machine readers. No one would have come to us if not for that. And I remember when I like first sort of radicalized in my consuming of Caps media rather than just like watching games and chatting about it idly on Google Plus or whatever the heck it was I was doing back then. I had, like, in my Google Reader, just I was just adding everything that I possibly could, you know. And back then it was like objective a bunch of like the nerdy analytic guys from out west. I'm trying to think of like Vic Ferrari, Objective NHL, yes. And MC79. MC79 was a couple years later, but and all the Caps ones, and there were, I mean, they all exploded between like 2008 and 2012. And then eventually I was like, oh, I'll just click on Caps clips instead. And so I removed, you helped me prune my Google Reader list and then my Feedly list. I just said, oh, I'll just click on.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of value, and this is kind of getting off on a little bit of a tangent, but I find a ton of value in social media curators. And like, if you can follow one person on Twitter whose judgment you trust to retweet good articles, not spend a lot of time putting crap into your timeline and whatever, that's enormously valuable to me. Like, you don't have to follow everybody for their, you know, one nugget out of 50 tweets or posts or whatever. You can follow the one guy who's going to pull that nugget for you and retweet it. That's, you know, that's a tremendously valuable thing. And I think that's sort of what Caps Clips aimed to become as it aged.
The when you were talking about, like, that might be it for the news for the day, I don't want to like blow a smoke here. In another
no, please. But, well, blow smoke.
Well, I'm going to Greg Wyshynski instead.
Okay.
I feel like when he jumped from AOL to Yahoo, and then it seemed like maybe he had like an edict or a personal mission to say. And this I think this is like similar attitude that me and Ian had at Rush Machine, is that although he did way better and more successfully and broader, that there are stories in this sport, in this league, and we should be able to do something every hour, every couple hours. And it's terribly destructive to hockey fans' productivity at work, but there is stuff here, and it just went unexploited for so long that I don't know, it feels like it's finally like an age of maturity. But unlike a lot of other sports, and I'm thinking mostly of like football, like the football media churn is like, here's the injury report, here's something that Stephen A. Smith said, then here's football, you know, Thursday and Sunday and Monday. It seems like in hockey, because of how many damn games there are, there's always something interesting happening. And it, please like my sport, I guess is what I'm getting at there. Like, I think as poisonous as a lot of the corners of the hockey community are, it's well worth the investment, even if your team doesn't win the Stanley Cup in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, but winning the Stanley Cup in 2018 is pretty fun.
It doesn't hurt. So,
but I mean, to your point about, you know, these one last point on these link dumps. Back in like 2005, 2006, when I started this thing, there were
no. Was that early? I thought I know. It was 2007.
It'll be 13 years this in July.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was during the lockout I started, and back then there was no. You know, there were no like puck headlines. There was nothing like that. We would have like monthly, maybe it was like biweekly or something like that, what was called the Carnival of the NHL. And it would rotate between among hockey blogs who was hosting it. And whoever was hosting it, everyone else would like send them a link from something they wrote, and then they'd have a post. So that's like, that was like the grassroots, like the way it started.
Well, it's like a web ring in the 1990s.
It was. Yeah. It was.
Which, by the way, if anyone listening who's younger than us has no idea what that is, but yeah.
No, not at all. That's, anyway, back to the Caps. What do you think?
They're a good hockey team.
Yeah, they are.
I don't know, that was a good 20-minute aside about hockey media gossip.
That's good.
Do you think that, like, people will continue investing in, like, is this the high watermark, or is there going to be,
you know, I don't know. One thing that has struck me, let's talk about the way that this team has celebrated this win. Okay.
Sure.
Because, it's current and endlessly entertaining. And you know, I guess the question, one of the questions is, what is the lasting effect of this, right? I mean, other than on Jacob Vrana's forearm, what is the lasting? To me, this team This celebration has been a community. These guys wanted it for DC. You can tell they are out and about.
They spent 36 hours in public places,
right?
In bars and restaurants and parks and in fountains.
It's amazing. Like I have a feeling, I was thinking about this, like if they did this in 2010, okay, say, I feel like it would have been a much more personal, quiet celebration. I mean, they still would have celebrated.
You're just
like Arthur Semin. Well, yeah. But I mean, it would have been like, oh, I heard Ovi and the guys were at this club, you know, obviously, you know, there wouldn't be quite as many pictures or whatever. But I still think it wouldn't have been this community engagement and involvement and to the extent that it is now. And these guys very clearly wanted it for this fan base, for this city. And I think that the way the fans turned out over the past couple weeks, it blew me away. I did not expect this.
To like, see, 12,000 people at Capital One Arena for a road game, and then to see the streets outside of that place just filled with tens of thousands of people. If I were in Tampa or Vegas and I was seeing that, you know, it's like the team gave the fans and the community in the city just an ounce of hope, and the community said, all right, screw it, I'm in 100%. And you know, lapsed fans or new fans or, you know, Ovechkin era fans or the 1998 group or geez, like, you know, the 91-92 group or the you from 83 or the season ticket holders from 74, every single person just said, I'm all in, you've got my support. And I think they saw that too. It's just like a feedback loop of good feelings.
It really was the way that the community, a year ago, 2 years ago, if they had had a watch party at Verizon Center for a road game in the second round against the Penguins, I would have been like, shit, they're going to get embarrassed because no one's going to show up there, yeah, right? Which is probably why they didn't. Like, I think Pittsburgh did outdoor watch parties for road games, maybe not in the second round, but you know, I would always been like, oh, I don't know, man, they could have some egg on their face if no one shows up to this thing. Maybe even I thought that for the first one that they had out here, no, the indoor one, I was like, oh man, are they going to get enough people that it's going to look okay? And everybody, it just blew me away, like how many people are there. And you know, one of my pet peeves during this whole thing was, I don't know if you noticed, but NBCSN has this campaign where it's like hashtag authentic fan.
It's the worst, or some shit like that.
It is, it's so bad, but it's like a
read the room, you know.
Well, yeah, but I guess it's like NBCSN wide, because I like the Golden State Warriors have it, and like the Sharks had it, and like I think Chicago had it too. But I just don't. I mean, there's nothing kind of grosser to me than like judging fans for how they fan and when they came along. Like, there's some like original fanhood that you're either born with or you're not or something. Yeah. Everybody comes in at some point, and if this is the point that they came in, great. Welcome aboard. This is cool. Let's see how it lasts. And you know, I think there'll be a honeymoon period. I guess maybe I'm a little skeptical about how long lasting the investment will be if something shiny comes along with either the football team or the basketball team or something.
Ooh, good news.
Yeah,
it won't. They're both intractably terrible.
Yes.
I was thinking back to last year's first round against Toronto, which was an excellent series, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing outside of, I forget what the name of the arena is, not Canadian Tire Center, whatever the Toronto arena is. Right, Bank or something. Yeah. Scotiabank or something like that. No, that's probably out west. It doesn't matter. The Toronto arena outside, they had tens of thousands of fans all in blue except for like 12 brave souls in red. And I was like, man, I mean, I understand that like Toronto and Montreal are like the center of the hockey world and this is what you get if you're those teams. I just thought, I know this will never be, you know, DC, but it may be lovely to get there one day. Maybe when like Ted's mega city happens, you know, absorbing Baltimore and DC. And then it did happen. Yeah. The next year in the semifinals and the finals. And it's just, I'm tickled pink about it. And I think, like you said earlier, these guys are gonna be legends forever. Barry Trotz will be Joe Gibbs forever. Down a tier just because it's not football, but I don't know. I don't know what where it goes from now, but I think it's a good place. About the fan gatekeeping or the fan policing, I entirely agree. And Authentic Fan is the most noxious promotion. I just have to assume that it came from somebody on like the C level of the organization, and then the consultants are like, I'm just gonna pipe down here because this guy signs my checks, and didn't say actually that's a horrible idea for a campaign. Do the opposite of that, but the idea of saying this person is the right kind of fan, this person is the wrong kind of fan is antithetical to everything that I don't know. As there was a time when like sports talk radio was not just the way you engaged with sports, but it was also sort of like the personality, the attitude that subsumed like a sports fan, like Robert De Niro in that movie. Mm-hmm. And was that Robert De Niro? Doesn't matter. Yes. Bobby. And then I don't know, times have changed, and like maybe like Bill James had a part to do with this, but I think just sort of like the wrong word, but like a liberalization of who can be allowed to be like a sports fan has grown in a really good way. And we're two white dudes talking about this, so what the hell are we doing? But the authentic fan seems to counteract that. I feel like in times I've been wrong on that, and DC being the sort of a cosmopolitan city that it is, people are really good at saying, hey, you know, you're not being a really cool person to folks that aren't maybe necessarily considered like the orthodoxy of a hockey fan. And I go, yeah. And it's probably on me to say, yeah, you made a good point there. I need to maybe readjust my attitude. I remember I wrote a thing that I really felt strongly about like, Sidney Crosby forever ago. And this is, but in that article was also like, I didn't like it when people said, who cares? And that's because I didn't like it when people said, who cares? But and I don't. I still don't. After Wes Johnson announces an opponent goal, right, they say, who cares? And my whole point was that I care a great deal. but I didn't mean it. But I think maybe I construed it in a way that was, if you do this, you're the category right bad fan rather than the good fan. Right. And I think that like maybe is a misplay. Whereas I think the Sidney Crosby thing is like a pocket of poison.
It is.
Inside the hockey community that,
you know. I mean, it completely fouls the air, and there's no need for it at all. I do tend to agree with you, you know, about not telling people how to fan. It might not be my cup of tea. I don't boo. It's just not a thing that I'll do. If people want to boo, you know, boo.
Do you go out to games still? Like, how many games do you go to?
I go this year. I probably made it to 6 to 10 games. That's before awesome. The playoffs, and then it used to be a lot more when I lived downtown and before I had kids. But alas, life. But,
so I mean, people have like maybe anyone that's like older than I don't know, like 30, and who's been a Caps fan for any length of time, like in 2004, 2005, 2006, tickets were just like, here you go. Like they had like student deals that were amazing, and then they had like cheap deals and late tickets coming out. And I feel like that, like for folks of our generation, not to like assume too much about our like age range, but like, it was really easy to get tickets for us back then. And, I feel like I went to a bunch of games that I would not have gone to otherwise. And I'm kind of worried now that the team had been having sellouts for so long, ostensibly, that when I'm doing a shoulder shrug here, cause I saw a lot of those purple Verizon Center, Capital One Arena seats. I wonder if, you know, escalating prices will keep more fans out. I'm kind of worried about what that impact will be.
Right, turning into the Rangers.
All corporate. And that's a problem that they have, they've had forever. That, like, the lower bowl is probably 30-40% corporate tickets.
It's tough. And when you saw, you know, you couldn't get into the building for the home games and the finals for under $1,000 probably in most places. And, you know, I think it just kind of is what it is, I guess. There are two schools of thought on those early Ovechkin years and cheap tickets and giving them away. It's, you know, on one hand, there's the line of thinking that, you know, if you see hockey games, you'll be a hockey fan forever. If you go live, right? It's not a sport that translates on television, people say. And, you know, you go live, you get it, and you will be a fan forever. And so bringing those fans in is great. But at the same time, at the time, because of Ted's deal with the arena and what he got on concessions, it might not have made as much sense. If you start giving away tickets, you're devaluing your product. And eventually people are going to say, why am I going to spend money on this when I can just get freebies next week or something like that? So, you know, it's a line, it's a tough line to walk. And I know that Ted walked it back in those days, maybe sometimes on either side of it, because you can't devalue your product too much by giving away too many tickets. At some point, you got to hold firm, take your lumps, and hope the team generates interest in other ways, because you can't just be there are other teams in this town maybe that give away tickets and aren't, you know, viewed as a major league product sometimes, I think.
Yeah. As like an organization, Monumental and Ted's, you know, holding company has had like a windfall over the last few years, both like with renegotiating the rights or getting new rights from Capital One to take over the naming rights of the facility, which is a way better deal than they had with Verizon Center, which might have been grandfathered in from MCI. I don't even know. And then winning the championship or every subsequent round, I understand, is worth, you know, a certain amount of dollars, both in merch and gate. And obviously they're having this you know, renaissance, and that, you know, goodwill will never be higher, or at least it's as high as it's ever been for them now. I think it's a lot of that has paid off for them, and they've done a great job with it. But I get vibes, or I get feedback from like season ticket holders that are not necessarily like happy with their investment or not happy with the customer service. And this is probably the worst time to talk about it, because I think fans' goodwill towards the team is excellent, but I think that they're in an interesting spot about, I think they had entertained for a minute the idea of moving to a different facility and maybe moving to Virginia or moving outside of the district, and those ideas are almost certainly tabled for now. And, you know, anytime he's at a dinner table with Dan Snyder or the Lerners, you know, Ted's got to be like sitting back. But I think he's done a wonderful job threading the needle, and that's about the best praise I can offer him.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a tough ass job.
It's tough. I mean, you're, and that sort of something Ted had said a while back, it circles back to the blogger credential discussion we were having. Is, you know, he was saying that a lot of other owners in the NHL, you know, they weren't hip to new media. Some still aren't. And he said, he likened it. He said, it's like I'm giving them the gun and the bullets to shoot me with, you know. But, you know, different markets bear different things, and you have to have different strategies to make it work. And, I mean, you look at the past couple weeks here, you look at this parade coming Tuesday, it works, and it's working. And there's no reason to think that it's going to stop working anytime soon.
Right on. John Press, anything else? What else is on your mind?
I don't know. I guess let's talk about Ovi.
Okay.
Because, like, Ovi, right? He is enjoying himself the past few days.
Yeah, he is.
Since he won and, you know, deserves...
Oh, I know where you're going with this. Okay.
Deserves to... Where are we going with this?
Well,
I wasn't sure where we're going with this.
Are you, are Are you talking about like an exit plan?
No.
Okay. Keep going. No. Then, and you have my attention fully.
Was it Proto a few years ago about blessing in disguise if Ovi left for the KHL?
I mean, listen, if somebody over the rink wants to just collect the bad takes.
Oh, we have folks. We have a Mount Rushmore of just horribly shitty articles that have been written about the Caps over the years.
Yesterday with Brooks?
No, we gotta add that. It's an informal list, but we gotta get it concrete. We have that. We have Proto's Ovi should bolt for the KHL. We have Burnside talking about how the Caps should be contracted.
Yeah,
that was a good one. That Anthony Sanfilippo one.
I don't know that one.
Oh, this was during Mike Green's second Norris-worthy year.
09?
Like right around there. And it might have been his first. And Sanfilippo was a writer in the PHWA from Philadelphia. And he wrote an article about how embarrassed he was to be for the PHWA for nominating Mike Green as a Norris finalist. And he had his top five. He had his Norris ballot. And it was like Christian Ehrhoff was like fourth or fifth, I think. And it's just an all timer. But
looking back at like Norris nominees and seeing who's won over the last couple of years, especially with like Carlson, I get more and more pissed off about Green's amazing. I think it was the 09 one where he just had a super point streak. I mean, like, he got robbed just because he didn't play the way people wanted him to play.
He was a dude ahead of his time. And I think
everyone's a Mike Green now.
Right. A huge part of that was that it came along in the infancy of analytics, or what we'd call analytics, because, oh, he doesn't play any defense. That, today you counter that with, yeah, but his team has the puck 60% of the time. They score 60% of the goals when he's on the ice. So who gives a crap about his, his gap control sometimes being problematic at the opposing blue line. I mean, he drives the hell out of play. So, yeah, Mike Green definitely was a little ahead of his time, and he got completely screwed.
From what you write, you're a San Filipino was the...
Yeah, well, I mean, that was his article, just that it was embarrassing that Mike Green was nominated for Norris because he, quote-unquote, didn't play any defense. Yeah. So, I mean, whatever. That was what it was. It was... Mike Green, speaking of Green, we were, like, talking the other day about the level of sadness power rankings for guys not here right now.
Hold on. Alsner,
he's got to be sleeping the sleep of regret.
I mean, he's well paid
sure.
for it, but Montreal's never going to do anything ever again.
Oh.
And they're going after Jack Johnson now.
Cool.
Mike Green should be up there, but oh, you know what? The top of the list has Brooks like doesn't have like a date to the league anyway.
he was on the list. I think Bruce Boudreau's got to be kind of sad right now. Like, no, I don't either. No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen anything from him since the finals. I'd like to hear some heartfelt. This would be like the first time he was at a loss for words. So I'm sure he's got them. So they'll ask at some point.
No, he was at loss for words after that game in Buffalo. Where if I have to teach them how to be tough mentally, I don't know how to do that. That was another example where he was already fired before he said that. I'm convinced of it.
I mean, you think about where we came from to get to this point. And, you know, we were talking about 2010 earlier and bringing it back to Ovi. You know, here's a dude who went through like about a 3-month stretch that was the Vancouver Olympics, which were just gutting for him. That Brian Campbell suspension and then Montreal. And like,
was it Campbell suspension? Or was that a bad hit? He was with Chicago, right?
Yeah.
I
think he boarded him.
It was a goal line thing and he hit him.
Boarded him into the corner.
And he broke his collarbone?
Something like that. I don't remember the specifics of it exactly.
And then Backstrom won in overtime. I was at a wedding.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. One of my favorite Backstrom plays of all time.
Yeah.
Just coast to coast. But Yeah, you come from that. That had to be the low. I mean, how low does it get? It can't get much lower than that for a dude personally. And to me, this guy's been here for 13 years. He's really been an absolute bulletproof vest for this organization. Mm-hmm. Like, how many times has Nick Backstrom really been criticized for the Caps playoff failures, right? How many times was McPhee criticized for him? How many times, anybody else on the team? It's always Ovechkin.
Add all those numbers up, put a zero behind it. That's how many times Ovechkin got the hit.
Right, instead. Exactly. I mean, Kuznetsov
scored two points probably last playoffs, right, in 12 games. And he was off scot-free, but Ovechkin was the problem with the team.
It's always Ovechkin, and, you know, I guess heavy is the head that wears the crown, but like, this guy took every shot, and so he owned it. He owned all of it. Yeah. And anything he wants to do right now, celebrating. He wants to sleep with the cup, sleep with the damn cup.
Everyone he
wants
sleeps to, with the cup. That's fine. That's great.
He wants to go do snow angels in a fountain in Georgetown. You do you, man. Like, you want to airmail Max Scherzer by 20 feet like you've never thrown a baseball in your life before? You just throw that thing to the backstop, buddy.
We were getting nods on Ovechkin's pitch, and I said, listen, given his BAC and his muscle memory, there's no way that that's going anywhere near a strike box.
No.
Did anybody think of another one? And he did. He sort of like...
It was high. But it made it there.
It was a catcher framing it.
Yes. Yeah. It was well framed.
I feel bad, right? Because I'll write like, 800 words, 1200 words, and then someone will just capture the whole thing better in a single tweet, which is just infuriating to me. And I don't remember who did it, so I'm going to feel bad, but maybe it'll come back to you. But somebody said, like, Ovechkin, play more defense. Like, Ovechkin, be a better team player. Ovechkin, be a different leader. Like, Ovechkin, do this. Ovechkin, do that. Ovechkin, why aren't you smiling anymore? I don't remember whose that was, but I was just so furious, right, that someone encapsulated everything that I was thinking, right, and couldn't articulate better, and they put it in the one. I'll, right, find that one.
I mean, he lost. It was clear he lost the love of the game at some point. Like, there was a Ryan O'Reilly quote from the Sabres breakdown day this year saying, basically, it's not fun. And that's a guy who's lost it. And like, Ovi at times sure looked like he lost any fun and any love.
It had zero win on that for me. When do you think that was?
Probably around 2010, with Vancouver and the crucifixion he got after that, for just terrible coaching decisions and roster decisions by the Russian team. And
why are national teams so, like, Canada is the only, Canada and maybe Sweden are the only national teams that are functionally run.
Yeah, but US, I mean, even Canada in those Mike Green years off. Was That's like, right. Screw Mike Green. So
probably the main reason why Green didn't end up in Toronto, where he should have been. Right.
Didn't they leave off PK Subban last time around? I think they did. So, they're not even flying right either. There are too many hockey men, doing hockey man things. So if you don't fit the mold. But it was probably around that time he was taking an awful lot of heat. The Caps were losing when they shouldn't have been losing. And he lost it, but he's come back. And his emotions on the bench during the playoffs were just incredible. Like, it literally, if you watched that man during this playoff run and didn't feel like his exuberance and just his heart on the sleeve type stuff, I don't know, what you're watching. That is sports. That's why you watch. That's why you invest emotionally in it, because these guys are avatars for us. When Braden Holtby makes a save and Ovechkin's, awestruck by it, that's all of us. When, all these goals, that's all of us. So, he got it back somewhere along the way and displayed it. And so, to me, everything he wants to do at this point, go for it, my man. It's yours.
Yeah. This is the most beer I've drank in a while. I don't begrudge him any amount of celebration. I could not possibly do it myself. I had like a sip of scotch in celebration. That was about all I could muster.
Yeah, I
paint the town. Paint the town red.
Yes, like, obviously.
And I think they'll keep it going for a while. I don't know when they're going to shave the beards off. Is it customary to do that before or after the parade?
I think some guys show up at the parade with a clean shave.
I remember most of my reference are like Jonathan Taves and Sidney Crosby because they win the Cup all the damn time.
Right.
But like I remember them being relatively fresh-faced at their...
Somebody had a tweet I saw today that said, I don't know why everybody's talking about Ovi's celebrations. Sid partied this hard. When they won, he stayed up past 10:15 three straight nights.
I was visiting Eileen, Eileen is from Chicago, and we were visiting her family right after they won the Cup last time. And I landed and I took their mass transit, SEPTA, whatever the Chicago system is. And I guess the parade had just gotten out and it was just filled with Chicago jerseys. And I my mind flashed back, I swear to God, to Pittsburgh 2009 into, when was the first Winter Classic against Pittsburgh in did you throw the parade at Hofbräu House?
I was there.
Yeah, I was there too. I didn't.
I think that was 2011, right?
Maybe 2010 into 2011. That sounds right. Yeah. It was. Yeah. So, I remember being there that night, and like, you know, there was a couple hundred Caps fans in that place. It was an awesome party, singing and chanting, and it was like, I was like, one day these people are going to win the Cup, and like, I can't wait to see that level of celebration. And then when I was in Chicago, I saw it like, you know, firsthand, as all these people, you know, boarding the L and you know, hugging each other and just being over the moon about it. And like, I'm thinking to Tuesday, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe that's going to happen.
So it's going
to
be
here. And you know, I mean, this is the Mordor of sports. This is the worst place on earth.
Not anymore. We're good now. We're good. Everybody else needs to get their act together, but we're good. But I mean, that Winter Classic, it's an interesting point that something I remember distinctly from that ties into what you're talking about this fan base and Caps Nation or whatever you want to call it, is sitting there in Heinz Field for the anthem and hearing the O and the red. Like, I'm not a shout O guy or a shout red guy, but you know, again, you do you. I think that a lot of people fought so that you could say or do what you want during the anthem, but that's, I don't want to go down that road necessarily right here, but
let's give that a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that'll be in our other podcast. but hearing like just a strong O and a strong red on the road, it was just like chills, man. It was awesome. And
were you like upper bowl or upper row or
I think we were in level? The 200s or something.
Okay, so
like
I was way up
suite level or whatever.
But I feel like they did like blocks. So like my block of seats was Caps fans, and like I didn't even realize that I was surrounded by friendlies until that happened. And then I was like, wow, this is, I mean, I'm basically at Verizon Center,
right?
It was
and then rushed. You know, on that note, how many Caps fans there were in Vegas to close it out for game 5?
Something like 30-40%.
Right. And it's hard not to think about Detroit winning it here when they did in 98 and how much red there was.
The wrong red.
We weren't. The Caps didn't even wear red then. So,
yeah.
So like seeing all that red, it just, you know, another poetic angle on it. It just, everything was perfect. It was just
magical.
Perfect. It just magical. Like, even if somehow they repeat next year, it's never going to be this again. It can never be this again.
That didn't even occur to me. And, I'm getting all verklempt about what you just said there, but yeah, you're right. Like this is, it demands that we keep reminding ourselves that this is this and this is happening and this is real and
this is it. I mean, it's never going to be this again.
Yeah.
It's probably a good way to wrap this, huh?
JP, thank you for hanging out. I'm glad we did
thank
this.
You.
I know we've like encountered each other like once or twice. Like we were at like we did a podcast thing a couple of years back, and we've shook hands a couple of times, but it's good to finally like spend some time.
Yeah, man.
Hashing out. I'm a big fan and I read you guys every day.
Likewise.
By the way, Cream's article was exactly the thing that like I I wanted to write, then I saw he did it, and I was like, yep, that's it. That was the thing that needed to be said.
He nailed it. He came out of the woodwork. I don't think he's written anything for our site in like 6 years. And he's like, hey, you want this? I was like, yeah, hell yeah. You bet I do.
Anyway, thank you for doing what you do.
My pleasure. Thank you guys, too.
All right, we're going to shake hands on Mike.
Yes, you guys can see that.
All right, take care.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now, it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.